And welcome to another installment of Mercenary Musings Radio, an exclusive audio service presenting views and insight from the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how have you been the past few weeks?
I've been busy, and with these markets, it's good to be busy. There's some nervousness going on, no doubt.
Yeah, it's hard not to be busy with these markets. Certainly never a dull moment. Last time out, Mickey, we talked molybdenum. Today, we're switching our focus to another niche area, two rare metals, niobium and tantalum. Provide us with some history of these two metals, Mickey.
Well, they were first discovered in the early 1800s. There was confusion if there was one or two or four elements involved. Eventually, it was determined that there were two. Niobium is also known as columbium, so you'll see, especially in the U.S., it referred, some of the products still referred as columbium, but on the world stage, they're niobium and tantalum. They're basically specialty metals, so-called rare metals. They do not trade on open markets, and they're transition group metals, number 4173 on the periodic table.
Mm-hmm.
They're niche metals because they are ductile and they're very corrosion resistant. They are refractory, which means they have very high melting points. And the most important thing here is they always occur together.
Okay, I mentioned in my that they're rare metals. Are they in fact rare, or are they found in many different areas of the world? Tell us about that.
Generally, they are not all that rare, especially niobium. It's the 33rd most abundant metal on the element on the periodic table. But they rarely occur in mineable concentrations, and there's not a lot of demand. So they are special. Supply specialty niches in the market. They occur, as do many specialty metals, in geological settings that are rather unusual, carbonatites and alkalic intrusions. And they often occur with low-grade rare earth elements, which we talked about before, and some other metals like hafnium and zirconium, and they also always occur with uranium and thorium, so there's always a radioactive component to the deposits.
Okay, now
economic deposits mm-hmm. for niobium occur in Australia, Brazil, and Canada, and carbonatites with a weird mineral called pyrochlore. And for tantalum, they occur with what's called a solid solution series between niobium and tantalum. Columbite, tantalite occur in pegmatites and placers, especially in places like Brazil and China and Russia and Ethiopia, Mozambique, and Central Africa.
Okay, now, you had mentioned that they're resistant to heat and corrosion. I would imagine that those characteristics, among others, would make them ideal for use in certain industries of manufacturing processes and products. Can you outline some of those?
Well, I think you've done your homework there. They are used, especially niobium is used for steel alloys and super alloys. It's an essential metal for very high strength steel, but it's used in very small quantities. About 10% of all steel has niobium in it, but the portion of niobium in these high-strength steels is one part in 1,000, so 0.1%. So there's not a lot of market. For tantalum, it is also used in a small part in super alloys, mm-hmm. but mainly it's used as capacitors for high-tech electronics, cell phones, computers, etc. And again, not a lot of demand.
Okay, not a lot of demand, but there's, I don't know, billions of cell phones, cameras, and computers in the world. If each one contains just a little bit, isn't that a pretty significant market?
For tantalum, the market is incredibly small, ranging from 2,000 to 3,000 tons per year. That's minuscule.
Mm, yeah.
So they are used as capacitors, but think about it, electronic capacitor in a microchip board is a pretty small amount of tantalum. For niobium, it has a much bigger market, but it's still a very small market, about 62,000 tons per year Now, both these markets have been growing year over year, but it's still incredibly small. For niobium, there are three mines in the world that supply 85% of the world's production. The gorilla on the block is CBMM in Brazil. Has something on the order of 500 years of reserves, 460 million tons of 3.25% niobium. There are also two other mines that supply significant amounts. That's Anglo American has a mine in Brazil, and IM Gold has the Niobec mine in Canada, in Quebec, which supplies it, I guess, if you consider Quebec part of Canada.
Well, we still do,
7% of the market. So that's niobium. For tantalum, there's a variety of mines scattered in various places in the world with primary production, but primary production's only about 1,100 tons per year.
Okay, well, let me ask you, Mickey, you've outlined the big boys in the block. You've outlined how these metals are used. And you've also hinted that there's not a lot of this stuff is really needed. And it sounds to me like the supply-demand situation is imbalanced, or there's probably lots of this stuff out there. There's certainly no shortage, is there?
Well, there is no shortage. And whenever CBMM in Brazil thinks there's going to be more, I mean, this is an open-pit mine. There's no explosives involved, no drilling. They just go in and basically scrape it up and process it. So CBMM is a monopolistic company that essentially controls the world market for niobium. I know some Australian geologists tried to break into the niobium market in the early 90s and realized you can't do it. For tantalum, I mean, 2,000 to 3,000 tons a year. 60% is primary mine supply. Mm-hmm. There is also, I should mention, the coltan placers, coltan meaning columbite tantalite, and these are conflict minerals in Central Africa. So there is a black market for tantalum, but essentially there are huge reserves. Three of the world's significant tantalum mines shut down in 2009 because of the economic crisis in 2008, and there was a huge stockpile of tantalum. So it's just something that
juniors
should not tread in this space.
Okay, so the bottom line is what you're saying is the mines that we have operating in the world today can easily meet the demand for these products for many, many years to come. Is that the bottom line conclusion here?
That's my conclusion, Rob. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's put our investing hat on in. Then there are exploration companies out there looking for this stuff, looking for mineable deposits. What is your opinion of this right now? Is this an area that investors should just steer clear of because of everything you've just said?
Well, I would say these companies are simply mining the stock market. There is an unnamed company that I'll kind of give some generalities on. And, you know, we market our radio show to Kitco exclusively, and so they have a policy that we don't mention companies, and we'll stick with that. But mm-hmm. There's a company that promotes its niobium tantalum play, actually tantalum niobium, because tantalum is what they're really promoting in British Columbia, but it's extremely low grade and it's remote, and it runs something on the order of 200 ppm tantalum and 1200 ppm niobium. Well, 1200 ppm is 0.12%, and they're going to compete with a niobium mine that has 3.25% in Brazil. You know, they're basically promoting the fact that three tantalum mines shut down in 2009. Well, that's because there was no demand for tantalum, and those mines will shut up, will start up again long before a junior in exploring in remote parts of BC could ever put a mine in production.
Okay, so the odds extremely long is what you're saying for a new player to crack this market indeed. Let's wrap it up on that note, Mickey, unless you had anything else to add. You did mention British Columbia. You're off to BC very soon, aren't you?
I'm going to Vancouver for about 3 weeks now. I've got a couple of field trips and maybe a fishing trip thrown in, but we're going to talk next time. We'll talk, and I'll be in Vancouver, and we're going to talk about another of my least favorite minerals, lithium.
Lithium, okay. We'll surprise listeners. One of these shows, we're going to come up with something that you really like, though, right? After lithium.
I thought we'd do a few shows here about things I don't like, and then we'll cycle back in, give the markets time to settle down, and then we'll, at some point by about midsummer here, we will go back and address the gold and silver markets and the copper market and the uranium market and some of these other things that the juniors have a chance of succeeding in.
All right. We'll wrap it up on that note. Thanks very much for this, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Look forward to it, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.